This programme was made with the support of Sound and Vision, Broadcasting Funding Scheme, a BCI initiative.
Raised on songs and stories.
You're all very welcome to Raised on Songs and Stories here on Near 90 FM. My name is Gerry Cooley, and for the next half an hour or so, we're going to be travelling the highways and byways of both Dublin City and County, meeting all sorts of people talking about all sorts of things. Songs, poems and stories, all about the good old days. And you never know, if you listen, you might hear somebody that you know. So get the kettle on, make yourself a cup of tea, put the feet up and sit back and enjoy yourself.
In the rare old times.
My very first guest today is a lady called Banny Cribbean from the village of Santry. Christened Philomena Lawless way back in the 1920s, she still has music flowing through her veins today. She is over the age of 80 and she still runs the post office in Santry, but more importantly, she still runs Cornave Papin, which is St. Papin's choir. Here's a song from them. Was the beautiful sound of Cornave Papin, St. Papin's choir, and that's going at least 70 years in the Ballymun Santry area, and most of it under the watchful eye of Banny Cribbean, Mina Lawless, and long may it continue. They still compete all over Ireland and are still coming back with the silverware. We're going to lighten the mood just a little bit now, and we're going to listen to a recitation that Mina picked up somewhere, and it's all about St. Patrick.
This is an old Dublin recitation. I read it in a collection of old Dublin recitations and songs published by the missionaries, the Franciscan missionaries, and I liked it. Last night I had a curious dream. Me thought that I did die. I found myself at heaven's gates in the twinkling of an eye. They were massive, wide and golden, and before them there did stand two little angel page boys with appointment books in hand. Up spoke one of the angels. "I've got your name," said he, "but you're not due for here until a quarter after three. So come inside and follow me. You've got some minutes' grace before the great St. Peter can sit upon your case." I walked between those golden gates, my knees in terror shook. The angel page boy laughed and said, "Come show a bit of pluck. I know that you're a sinner like all of Adam's crew, but remember that St. Peter was once a sinner too." I followed where the angel led. We reached a lofty hall where sat the great St. Peter beneath his silvery pall. He smiled at me quite amiably, saying, "Please stand over at the bar until my private secretary can check on who you are." I stood and shivered at that bar full 15 minutes wait, and then St. Peter called me and I rushed to learn my fate. In both his hands he held a chart, the like I'd never seen. The credit side was done in black, the debit side in green. And worse than that, the debit side was full and PTO'd. The credit side was empty save for one wee tiny note. "Look up," said he quite pleasantly, "you need not tremble so. I know it's very hard to live. I lived myself, you know. Now let me see, you started life within the holy season, and there isn't much to judge until you reach the use of reason." And suddenly a loud voice cried, "St. Peter, stop this case. You cannot judge this prisoner. She's of the Irish race." I turned round and I saw a man come striding up the hall. It was our great Saint Patrick, majestic, bearded, tall. "What mean you, Patrick?" Peter said. "How dare you stop this case? What matters it that she be of the famous Irish race?" "It matters much," St. Patrick said, "for in the law there's writ that 7 years ere this world ends, I must in judgment sit on all the sons of Erin, of Oisin and Conan Mhuil. As God to Abraham gave Canaan, he gave me Clonmel." He turned to me. "Run out," said he, "and in the outer hall you'll find the angel Gabriel, and bid him blow the call to summon all the Irishmen, the living and the dead, the ones that's hale and hearty and the ones that's sick in bed." I went outside, and sure enough, behind a golden door, I found a shining angel I had never seen before. I gave my message with my Dublin accent ringing clear. He looked at me and smiled and raised his trumpet in the air. And there came forth the weirdest sound, a most peculiar call, a mixture of the banshee's wail and Shin the Fiend the Foil. But Ireland knew, for in answer to that most peculiar air, there came a swarm of Irishmen from almost everywhere. From all the corners of the earth came all of Erden's clan. From north and south and east and west they came. Some walked, some ran. "Come right inside," St. Patrick said. And though the place looked small, when everyone was seated, there was ample room for all. "Cé Lauren Gaeilge?" Patrick asked. "Clann na Gael abu." And several shot up just one hand, and several shot up two. "Come up in front," St. Patrick said. "The best, the highest place for you's reserved, because you kept the language of your race. The rest of you may come up too, but not up quite so high. Although you kept the faith alive, you let your language die." "Three cheers for our St. Patrick," I heard a voice exclaim, and up from every Irish throat a lusty yell there came. I gave one cheer with all the rest. I too was with the dead. But I never gave another, 'cause I woke up in my bed.
And I wonder, will St. Patrick come to my defence when I end up outside the pearly gates with St. Peter? Will there be credits in the book? We're just going to have to wait and see. But Mina definitely has lots of credits in there. That was recorded in her kitchen in Santry Avenue beside the post office. Mina is still the postmistress up in the Santry post office, even though she's over the age of 80. We started talking about the 1916 rebellion. I was talking about the fact that I had been a tour guide up in Kilmainham Jail, and she told me that she actually knew Grace Gifford, who was the widow of Joseph Mary Plunkett. So we got talking about that a little bit, and then she piped up and gave me the poem that Joseph Mary Plunkett had written, His Blood Upon the Rose, which is referenced in the words of that song, Grace, that Jim McCann sings. So let's hear the poem, His Blood Upon the Rose.
Joseph Mary Plunkett, yeah. I knew Grace Gifford as well. She was in our sodality, an Irish-speaking sodality that I was in, and she was in it, so we knew her well. Maybe in her mid-twenties, in 1916. So, say, in the sodality then, she would have been in, maybe in her 60s when I'd be in the sodality. But she was there with us. And but the reason I say, but the poem that Joseph Mary Plunkett wrote, it is the mind of a very noble Irish Catholic man. And what he wrote, we used to sing it because there's a nice air for it as well. He wrote, "I see his blood upon the rose, and in the stars the glory of his eyes. His body gleams amid eternal snows, his tears fall from the skies. I see his face in every flower. The thunder and the singing of the birds are but his voice, and carven by his power, rocks are his written words. All pathways by his feet are worn. His strong heart stirs the ever-beating sea. His crown of thorns is twined with every thorn. His cross is every tree." And what I say is, the man that wrote that has to have been a very noble man. And then that same man married Grace on the eve of his execution. And Grace wore his ring and kept his name for the rest of her life.
What a beautiful poem there, recited by Mina, all from memory, no written notes in front of her. His Blood Upon the Rose, Joseph Mary Plunkett. As I explained earlier, I was a tour guide up in Kilmainham Jail, so I would have had call to bring people around to the courtyard where the leaders were executed. One execution in particular resonated very deeply with me, and that was James Connolly, because he was separate from the rest. He was in a military hospital up in Dublin Castle, treated for injuries and then brought down and subsequently executed while he sat in the chair. So throughout the summer, I would be bringing people to this and telling that story, and I started to establish a little bit of a bond with him. So I came across this poem that is used by the Wolf Tones to start the song James Connolly. I've been trying to find the author of it, but I'll let you have a listen to it. It's from the point of view of one of the men who was picked to execute James Connolly on that fateful day. The man was all shot through that came today into the barrack square. And a soldier I am not proud to say that we killed him there. They brought him from the prison hospital. To see him in that chair, I swear his smile would far more quickly call a man to prayer. Maybe I don't understand this thing that makes these rebels die. Yet all men love freedom and the spring clear in the sky. I wouldn't do this deed again for all that I hold by. As I gazed down my rifle at his breast, but then a soldier I. They say he was different, kindly too, apart from all the rest. A lover of the poor, his wounds ill-dressed. He faced us like a man who knew a greater pain than blows or bullets ere the world began. Died he in vain. Ready, present, and him just smiling. Christ, I felt my rifle shake. His wounds all open, and around his chair a pool of blood. And I swear his lips said fire before my rifle shot that cursed lead. And I was picked to kill a man like that. James Connolly.
My next guest is a lady called Esther Ryder. She was born in the 1920s over in Kevin Street, and as a young girl she made her way over to Merino on the north side. But her travels weren't finished. When she got married, Herbie Armstrong was the name of her husband. Both of them headed off to New York to make a life for themselves there in the early 1950s, and they stayed there to this day. I caught up with Esther on one of her return visits back to Dublin to see her relatives, the Kennys. And we spent an evening talking about the old days. First of all, we discussed the song Dublin 1962. She gives us her thoughts on that.
Skies were blue in Dublin town in 1962.
You say you like that, you like the words in that one.
Yeah, I do. I
do. Do you remember when you heard it first?
It's perfect. Billy, my friend Kathleen, Billy O'Neill, he sent it over to me. Kathleen was over here one time, over, and she was coming over to me, and he sent this over to me, and I really thought the words were great, because they're just...
You had emigrated.
Yes, and, yeah, and they were our song, they were our words. It's a nice song, but the words and that song is us.
I understand.
A little later than me, really. The words like walking through the streets of Dublin and... hearing the guys shout "Hurdle or Mail" and all that. Really great.
Okay.
Really great.
So that meant more to you. It was more relevant to you.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
And that was Esther's thoughts on the Dublin Standard, Dublin 1962, and how she felt that it was relevant to her story, emigrating to New York, and the words in the song resonated with her. But while she was there in her latter years, she did join a choir. And it was discovered that she had a brilliant voice, and she was giving the solo parts in the choir, and one of her party pieces was this one, Galway Bay.
Or it's maybe someday I'll go back to Ireland, be it only at the closing of my day, just to sit and watch the moon rise over Claddagh, and see the sun go down on Galway Bay, to see again the ripple of a trout stream, the women in the meadows making hay, and to sit beside a turf fire in a cabin, and watch the barefoot gossoons at their play. For the winds that blow across the bogs of Ireland are perfumed by the heather as they blow, and the women in the uplands digging praties speak a language that the English do not know. For the English came and tried to teach us their way. They scorn us just for being what we are. Sure, they might as well go chasing after moonbeams or light a penny candle from a star. So if there's going to be a life hereafter, and somehow I feel sure there's bound to be, I will ask my God to let me make my heaven in that dear land across the Irish Sea.
And what a beautiful version of Galway Bay that was by Esther. She went on to tell me a little story about a magazine called Ireland Zone, published out of Wexford, been on the go for the last 100 years, and a lot of expats by it. And she decided that she was going to send in a poem to Ireland Zone when she read it in New York, hoping that they'd publish it, and they did. Somebody's Mother is the name of the poem. And she goes on to tell me about a letter that she got from a reader who saw it published, and this is what it had to say.
Near the end of the letters, I got this letter from India, and it was this priest, and he said, it's a funny thing, he said, his mother had just died 3 months ago, and he was grieving about her. But he said he was sent to another parish, this is in India, he was sent to another parish, and when he got there, he said that he was looking for something to read, and the priest was over that parish, said, there's a few magazines in the library in there. And he went in, and it was Ireland's Own. And my poem was in it. Right. So he said, now you have to be my mom instead of, I lost my mom. So, lovely letter. So I now write to him all the time. The woman was old and feeble and grey, and bent with the chill of the winter's day. The streets were wet with the recent snow, and the woman's feet were weary and slow. She stood at the crossing and waited long, alone, uncared for, amid the throng. Down the street with laughter and shout, glad with the freedom of school let out, came the boys like a flock of sheep, hailing the snow piled white and deep. Past the woman so old and grey, hastened the children on their way. None offered a helping hand to her, so weak, so timid, afraid to stir. At last came one of the merry group. He paused beside her and whispered low, I'll help you across if you wish to go. He guided the trembling feet along, proud that his own were firm and strong. Then back again to his friends he went, his young heart happy and well content. She's somebody's mother, boys, you know, and for all she's poor and old and slow. And I hope some money will tend a hand to help my mother, you understand, if she is cold and old and grey. Now somebody's mother bent low her head in her home that night, and the prayer she said was, God be kind to that little boy, it was somebody's son with pride and joy.
Very nice.
Into the inner city of Dublin on the north side, just off Mountjoy Square, there's a lane, and up that lane lives a man called Barney Richardson. His father lived there, and he had a bit of a menagerie farm. He had pigs, horses, dogs, and even goats. And Barney tells us about the early days of the Abbey Theatre, that he used to get a half a crown a week for bringing animals up there who were part of the play. So we have a bit of a gas about that. But the big one is myself and Barney get our wires crossed about a man called Jack Plant. I think he's talking about Jack Palance, the famous Hollywood actor, but he puts me wired.
You're the woman of the carnal mouth, Potter.
Do you want another
glass? Yeah,
he's
in the humour now.
He has
the goo on him now.
Absolutely, he's right.
He's really part of him.
Yeah, I was part of
it, yeah. Do you know when I was growing up in town here, if people buy an egg, they divide between the children, one or two children, a bit in each, a bit of bread.
A boiled egg?
Yeah. Things was that bad and that tight. You know.
I think I'm making
a rope. That's the thing. I was on the first flight, Abbey Theatre, and I used to bring down a goat to the Abbey Theatre. This is no God. On the stage. A half a crown a week.
Well, what year was that?
I'll be in the 30s, early 30s.
And what did you do with the goat up on the stage?
Walked across the stage.
You were part of the play, were you?
Well, I wasn't part of the play. The goat was a part of the play.
But, so you were an actor, were you?
No, wait a minute.
Well, I was looking at your glasses. You did look like Barry Fitzgerald. He was an avid actor. You should be on the stage, Barney. It was one leave in 3 hours.
Listen, I left the stage.
Okay, well, get off the stage.
I got off it. Leave it across the stage.
And why would you leave the goat across the stage?
It was supposed to be about sea. Now, where it was, I don't know. Some young said, no, where it was. And buckets of water.
Special effects, wasn't it?
And then the fucking thing rattling it all over. And the wind, you remember the sharpening stone. And he let it go.
Making
up the wind. That's true.
You don't know what the name of the play was? Wasn't Gone with the Wind, were you? I'm Gone with the Goat.
No, you isn't. I'm putting that in your head. Not laughing.
Here, tell him what picture you were in.
What?
Tell him what picture you were in.
Oh, on tent. Tyrone Power.
Susan
Haber. And Tyrone Power. And what were you doing in Ontario? You were an extra, were you?
Extra. Driving the house. Jack Palant was in it. Did you know Jack Palant?
Yes, yeah. You don't know him, yeah.
What's the name of him?
He was in Shane.
Untamed.
No, he was in that.
Yeah, Untamed. And Tyrone Power was in it.
Yeah.
Go away.
And not the Jack Palant you were talking about. Jack Palant that lived in Newer Street.
Jack Palance from Mirror Street.
Yeah. Lives in Mirror Street. Oh, my heart's butcher shop.
No. Was that a nickname or was his real name?
No, he cowboys his name. We have a toys and different things going on. Anyway, there was a good film on, a western.
Yeah.
He got the part. He come up and hold a horse up near that and put his own saddle on it. Cowboy hat and go around advertising there.
He'd be riding around the streets of Dublin.
Yeah, advertising the films.
Yeah. Never heard
he'd
that film.
Tell me much about it, like,
and what was his real name?
That was his Jack name. Jack Palant.
What's his real name?
Yeah.
Go away. So anyway, get back to this film, Untamed, right?
Huh?
How did you get involved in that film? Who came to you and said, you know what it is, Barry, do you want to be in a
Jack
film?
Jack Palant told me. You got it. I put out. Five horses, isn't it?
What was the story in The Untamed?
About
was
Africa.
It a love story?
Africa.
It was about Africa.
About Africa. Way back in the...
Right. And they filmed some of that in Ireland?
Oh, yeah.
What were Ireland parts, with
Ireland? The mansions we had in Ireland.
Oh, the mansions.
Yeah.
Mm. So did you go to one of these
Don't
mansions?
Don't be so wicked and listen to what they're told.
So there's mansions in Dublin, you're filming
not
in mansions.
Dublin, not in Dublin. You see, I think it comes out again. The anchor comes out.
These were hard, oranges.
What?
The horses.
Right.
Yeah,
it was
wasn't it?
And did you get talking to Tyrone Power like that?
No, he wasn't here. He wasn't here at all.
Oh, you were just making scenes.
The one took the parts of, what's he call it? She joined what's her
name? Susan Hayward.
Was it Susan Hayward?
Well, you're other than you better pay me.
Well, no, just before we talk about money, right, did you get paid for The Untamed? Is that under the floor?
I did. I did.
Well, that's a fair old back, so fair enough.
I did.
Before you go, I need the map, right?
What?
Map. I want a map. X marks.
Get two maps.
One on top of your head.
And yes, you can tell everyone's having a really good time. That was up in Barney's house, up in the lane, facing Nairney Court, where Temple Street is.
off Gardiner Place, and the daughters are all sitting around. We have a lovely red roaring fire. Barney's a bit crotchety to start, but I wear him down in the end. I think it's hilarious that I get it mixed up. I think he's talking about Jack Palance, the famous Hollywood actor, but he in actual fact is talking about Jack Palance. Jack Palance lived in Moore Street. He was a well-known extra character in the late 40s, 50s, even into the early 60s. Well-known for going around Dublin on horses, advertising Western films. And I believe that he ended up, one of his last publicity stunts was during the 60s when he was spotted cycling around Dublin on a bike dressed as a tiger, advertising the Esso promotion, Put a Tiger in Your Tank. So as the interview finished, we got talking about Annie, who was Barney's wife, and her favourite song was that Perry Como classic, And I Love You So. So I asked a very good friend of mine, Terry Lee from Kilbarrick, another good dub, if he could play it on his guitar for me, instrumental, and he obliged me. Here you go.
Songs and stories, heroes of renown.
That brings us to the end of another show today. I hope you've enjoyed listening in. I hope to have the pleasure of your company this time next week. This is Jerry Cooley on Near 90 FM with Raised on Songs and Stories.
And houses, the haunting children's rhyme. That once was Dublin City in the rare old times. Ring-a-ring, a rosy, as the light declines, I'll remember Dublin City in the rare.
This programme was made with the support of Sound and Vision, Broadcasting Funding Scheme, a BCI initiative.